And then it stands.
Number three.
Skip one, Mr. Chairman.
Number three.
He's in a hurry.
He wants to get home.
Variances and their standards. I got three checked off. That's why I'm at the four, so. All righty.
We put both the variances and the special use exception standards on there. I know you all are familiar with them, but I thought sometimes we don't get a chance to really discuss some of the standards. You know, we go through so many in a night. We get a piece here, a piece there, where maybe one of the standards comes up. The thing that we've noticed in cases that I've had to deal with, the areas that there's really the three of the five standards tend to be the ones that we see the most litigation over. The uniqueness of the property, the reasonable use standard, and the exceptional practical difficulty could not have been created by the applicant. Those are the ones that tend to come up the most. I think with the essential character of the neighborhood, usually if it's, you know, you get a case where it's been there 30 years, it's probably part of it. If it's minimum variance, you know, if what they're asking for is all they need, you know, that gets them what they need, then we're usually okay with those. But we generally notice that those are the three ones that we have the most contentiousness with. And I think they're also the hardest ones for the applicant to prove. And, of course, they've got to meet all of them. We've gotten some interesting insight into the reasonable use standards. Basically, it's such that the property would be of such minimal value that it would be worthless. That's been an interpretation by the courts. It can be reasonable. A reasonable use may exist even if it's not the preferred use. I just state these as things to kind of consider as you go through. I know you do anyhow, but just as a reminder. And if it's already been developed, there's an argument it's already being reasonably used. That's something that courts have found. So something to consider. Uniqueness of the property. This is really what's got to create the difficulty. So it's got to be something inherent with the property. You know, I don't want us to talk about any specific examples tonight, but let's say you've got a case where half the property is wetlands. They can't really build on that half. You know, they might really need a front yard setback in order to build their house on the property. You know, that's a classic example one. You get a property that's maybe shaped like a triangle, and you can't really build a normal size house on it without getting into the side or rear yard setbacks. Those are the kinds of things that we see that are classic examples of that. But you know, keep that in mind as you go through, because there can be cases where you look at it and go, what's really unique about this? You know, it's a square lot, and the neighbor's got the same square lot, could build in compliance. Why can't they? And they've got to meet that. They've got to demonstrate that. So just something to really think about. The other one is the actual exceptional practical difficulty standard. And I'm going to read it to you because it's longer than what's in the code, but this is what case law has determined it as. It requires the board to determine that the difficulties presented by the owner are practical rather than theoretical, exceptional rather than routine. In undergoing this analysis, the board should take into consideration the nature of the zone in which the property lies, the character of the immediate vicinity and the uses contained therein, whether if the restriction upon the applicant's property removed, such removal would seriously affect such neighboring property and uses, whether if the restriction is not removed, the restriction would create an exceptional practical difficulty for the owner in relation to its efforts to make normal improvements in the character and the use of that property, which is permitted under the provisions of the ordinance. That's a really long definition.
Yeah, sure.
It really is. But I think what you've got to look at is the problem to the homeowner one that is really exceptional? I think that's the big thing. There's a difficulty there. Is it one that they could say, your deck doesn't need to be 20 feet. Maybe you could do it 15 and have everything. Yeah, that may not be an exceptional one. But the home that can't go any further in their backyard because it's wetlands, that may be an exceptional practical difficulty for them to be able to have a normal size house. So just something to think about as you go through your analysis. I think you do a pretty good job of it, but kind of a reminder, a refresher more than anything. And they're all independent. You've got to look at them all. You know, check all five of them. If they don't meet them, and there's times you'll deny them. If they meet three of them, explain why they meet the three. Show that you went through that analysis. You know, they met this one. They met this one. They met this one. But they did not meet these two, and here's why. Because then we can show that we've gone through the full analysis, all five factors. And obviously when you approve them, you've been going through all five of them, but, you know, give reasons, cite to the record when you can. It helps me when I'm writing so that I can, you know, write what you all are deciding.
I have a question for you. When you were talking about the unnecessary hardship or the practical difficulty.
The standard is exceptional practical difficulty.
Right. They said it was distinguished between the exceptional practical difficulty standard and the unnecessary hardship standard. But then it goes on to say this.
Are you reading from...
from your... Okay. Can I...
I'll talk to you afterwards about that one, Mr.
Okay. Parker. All right. Because I really don't understand why we're not changing... What I think this okay, I can talk to you about this. We had I think maybe when Rick Burrell was here, we had a situation, it's the same situation where it was supposed to be changed by county council. I believe he was in the process, it never happened. I was the secretary then, I believe. And now it's come to you, Jamie, that this is not right, that the state supersedes our language, so to speak, and we've got to get it changed.
I'd prefer not to discuss that right now because that's still an active case.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Then. It is?
Anything that's active, you know, involving potentially active
that's
litigation.
Fine. I didn't know it was active, though. Okay.
Hey, you said you want to talk to Bud
later. Why don't you explain it to all of us instead of just talking to Bud?
Well, the...
I mean, there's five members on this board.
Understand.
Understand that.
And the standards that we have for granting a variance is they have to prove that the exceptional practical difficulty was not created by the applicant. That's what the state code provides.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to follow. Mr. Rickard had brought up why the unnecessary hardship is not in there. And the standard there that we have to use is the exceptional practical difficulty.
So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah.
And isn't there a difference between New Castle County and Kent?
There is.
Sussex County, there is. Criteria is different than that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. You may recall that a couple years ago, we had a case, went to the Supreme Court. Rick actually argued it, where, and this is the reason we don't do the balancing test that Kent and Newcastle do. We do we have to go through all five standards. So that was a change of the goalposts there. So... our state statute that enables our legislation is different than the other two counties by quite a bit. We're different from the counties and the municipalities. So.
But you think it would be consistent?
You would think.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at.
There's a lot of things in the statute that are not as clear as you would hope. But that's why we review them. That's why we have these kind of meetings where we can improve things.
And I have to agree with Bud. Back when Rick was the attorney on behalf of the board, that issue was discussed, and it was I thought it was being worked on to get it corrected so that you could use that in your decision making based on something similar to the state, or the, not the state, but the Newcastle and Kent County. And it, to my, it never happened.
Yeah.
I don't know why. No, I'm not saying Rick.
And that's a,
I'm saying never got that far.
Yeah, that's a General Assembly question.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the things so, that, sorry.
So it got stopped.
I don't know if it got stopped.
That's my question.
I don't know where it went.
I want to know what happened to it.
I don't know.
I don't know if it got to the legislators or not. I really don't.
Yeah. I don't know. That was before my time, so.
Yeah, and I wanted to know if you were
aware of it.
Aware of it? If you were involved in it or no?
So, well, that's exactly,
so it's still out
point.
There. It's still out there somewhere.
What type of effect does it have on our decision making, man?
Well, you're still using the five standards.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what I mean. So it doesn't have no effect then. That's what my question is.
Yeah, something you can consider until such time it were to be amended.
Yeah, if the General Assembly were to change its code, the state code, regarding the Board of Adjustment standards, five standards, then we would have, you know, we'd have to look at, okay, do we go to how Kent and Newcastle handle it or how the municipalities handle it. Until then, we've got to go with they got to meet all five. The other jurisdictions have a balancing test.
So three out of five type of thing?
Yeah. It's a, there's a weight, you know, there's a
waiting.
Yeah, it gives a little more fluidity to it.
Yeah. All right.
This is a much more rigid standard.
Yeah, it is then.
Old English law.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Does that answer that then?
Fine.
Okay.
So what was the purpose of that, of the state doing that for
some? I don't know. It was passed, I think, in the early 90s. I don't know why sometimes they'll do that as a method to provide better clarity, so that the Supreme Court basically found that all those standards had been, you had to meet all of them. You got to meet each and every one of them. And, you know, maybe it was inartfully drafted. Maybe somebody should have drafted it at the balancing test. I don't know.
Yeah. But it would be the responsibility of county council to pursue that, right?
And the legislature.
Right.
Sorry, Brent.
You got your five standards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the new one we got drawn up to, what we're going to look at. They're here because they can't meet all their standards. So we hit four of them or three of them.
They haven't met their standards.
They're here because they want an exception to the rules.
Yes.
But they have to meet the standards.
All five.
I understand that, but we're still given a variance because they cannot meet that standard and are asking for a variance.
Right.
That's what they're asking for, right? Because they can't meet the standards.
No.
No.
They can't meet maybe the setback standards.
Yes.
That's different than the variance standard. If I've got my box and I've got wetlands that cover half of it, I can't build in my buildable envelope.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is I need to go outside my buildable envelope
to
be able to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
So they've got to prove that they've got a unique property.
Okay, gotcha.
That because of that unique property has created exceptional practical difficulty. It's,
okay.
You know, all that stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
And a lot of times it's a septic.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see it with
septic or
wetland. You see septic a lot.
And if you notice, some of the questions that I'll ask will be about that. You know, where's your septic system?
Yeah.
You know, where, because, you know, there might be things on that property that when we're looking at a survey, it just looks like a normal size lot.
Yeah.
But then you find out, well, the backyard floods anytime it rains heavy, or there's a septic tank that's right here that makes it so they can't do anything, or there's a big, you know, there's a series of large trees that are blocking this, that, or the other, or, I mean, there's...
They only go one way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of thing, you know, I'll ask questions like that just if I think that maybe that might be a situation. You can kind of tell usually with sometimes where the applications are from that maybe those issues are in place, especially the low-lying ones.
Yeah, you had one recent that had, he wanted to build a shop next to his house. And it had to encroach on the setback on the side, because he couldn't get to the backyard because the septic mound system went all the way across the lot. He couldn't get a car around it.
Remember that.
That was a recent one. That's just another example. What is it? You get it once in a great while, but
yeah. But sometimes people don't think to ask, you know, to bring that up if they're unrepresented. So
yeah, right.
And I guess the if any other questions on variance, or we can move on to the special use exception.
Yeah.
I know you guys have done a great job of hitting the standards for a special use exception. One of the things that I kind of thought about when I was kind of come up with, what can I discuss on this, because you guys really do a good job with it, would be two things. One would be if there are some good reasons, like you know, there's no extra noise, there's no extra lighting, there's no extra sound, things like that that would disturb a neighbor, you know, things that maybe we haven't heard, you know, there's in the record that we could use. And the other one was that if there are other requirements as far as the, because we do see this more with the special use exception than the variances, where, you know, like the medical hardship one, we need to make sure there's a finding that there's hardship. We need to make sure there's a finding that with a cell tower, for example, that they've met all those other standards. If there's those are two that really jumped out at me, but we need to make sure that when we're not just saying that it meets the special use exception standard, because there's also another component to that. And maybe that might be something on the form, the application form, to have on there as well, whether there's additional standards that need to be met. I know that would be helpful, you know, to me, if I'm sure to you all, hey, there's maybe another thing we've got to look at here.
I always make sure that they have it. I make that a part of the record. If you notice, I always say there's a doctor's request here. I mean, they requested a doctor's certificate that they need to, you know, have this home there as a medical hardship.
Well, years ago, we actually generated a form that was a doctor physician statement.
Right.
You did that years ago.
Yeah, I did that.
And it was, the purpose of it was to have some doctor statement, even if it wasn't on doctor letterhead, at least the doctor could check off the issues and then sign it and date it, so we knew that it was the document attached to the request.
Yeah,
that
remember.
Comes up up front. We don't take the application without it. Some of them are a little bit late for reasoning, but most of them, some of them can give you a list that feel sorry for the person, not even knowing them, but just reading the long list of.
And they're sitting there in the audience, and you can't believe that's even possible.
That's not the same person that we thought they were.
You know, Jamie brought up cell towers, and one concern I've had when applicants come before us, and they're asking for a cell tower. And at one point, when early on, I think you provided, or someone provided us a map of towers and whatnot.
Yes.
But you know, we're hearing that, you know, there's no other, you know, from the applicant, there's no other towers that we can locate on. But we know there's towers in the area, and
the ordinance says they have to tell you that they can't cohabitate or.
Co-locate
on a tower within that certain distance.
But
I know there was.
But, you know, saying, you know, I can come here before this board and say, you know, there's no tower that we can co-locate on. Maybe it's because the rent's too high, or maybe it's because of whatever. So I'll just say, you know, well, there's no other tower. But we don't have
nothing to go by
to proof of that.
In other words,
you know, and
that,
and
yeah.
Whether the rent's higher for whatever reason, if there's another tower there, then they shouldn't necessarily be there shouldn't be necessarily a need for another tower just because it doesn't suit them.
John, let me answer that question from what I know, and then Lawrence can elaborate on that. I know when I was there, I made sure the inspectors in their area went out so I could get this information for Lawrence. I made the inspector go out and get every cell tower in that area, and I would have mapping
put on the maps where the cell towers were located, okay, and radio towers, all right? And I turned all that over to, I believe, mapping, wasn't it? I turned all the cell towers. I used to have that on my wall.
Remember? You said on the wall. We still have it.
Do you still have it? Is it up?
Hit away somewhere. I don't know where it is. We have a whole file on cell towers. Take a full fog at it.
Yeah.
It's in there.
I mean,
I know it's,
there have been so
there.
Many more since.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, should at some point, should we require that any tower within a 2 mile period or 2 mile radius of the request that they have a letter from the owner of that tower stating that they can't locate on their tower?
It would be beneficial if that was in the ordinance, not just a policy.
Okay.
And it's clear that that's what they need, that information.
Maybe you want to
include that with GPS?
As a sub thing on your letter.
Well,
that's a different letter. But
yeah.
Got GPS now is a lot easier than on site where you had to walk up and see where am I? I'm at Route
right.
1. And GPS is right there now. You can put it right into a CAD system. Okay, and
but it still doesn't tell
well,
you.
Well, no, it doesn't.
Will that tower physically or
right.
otherwise support
right.
another, resident, not a resident?
Well, some have come. Some applicants have come in and showed us, and maybe had correspondence that they could not get access to that tower because they were already either over occupied or weren't going to lease any more space.
Right,
but they had to show that they requested that information.
But if they
don't request it, we don't know.
If they say they're not going to lease any more space, if it's a tower that we've approved, they have to lease at least two other spaces.
Well, that's true.
Right,
but they probably already have.
Well, it's the same way. Are they telling the truth?
Right.
Are they telling the truth? You
keep telling that to them. They're swearing to
it. Swearing to it. Tell me now.
And I keep asking you, how do we know? And he said, that's up to you, bud. I said, oh, well.
There's no way of knowing.
No way.
No.
Unless you require them to bring an affidavit in.
Right.
Well, that's true.
Right. That's why I'm thinking that, you know.
That's a good idea.
An affidavit from
yeah.
from the owner of the tower that says,
tower,
you know.
That is. Well, that's true.
Same way with the summons.
Uh-huh.
Same way with the summons.
Could you do that,
I mean,
too?
The guy's saying, yo, I got to run him out. Yeah. We're taking his word.
Well, I don't know how you can
ask
if they're rented out when it's not even been built yet.
Right.
Have you got clients with interest? Maybe they could say, but.
Oh, yeah, they say that,
you
know, yeah.
The board asked that question. Have you got them all rented out? And it's not even built yet. I don't know. How, a lot of people won't take it unless they know it's up there. They might commit to a contract, future contract or something of that nature, but it's nothing official.
Yeah, occasionally you get it where there's the owner of the billboard has a business on another property and they're planning on using it.
Well, you got
that
a couple weeks ago. They said that they've got, it'll probably be rented out to their own subdivisions or whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing that you've got, Mr. Workman, is I believe you always ask that question about the renting. They're under oath when they answer that.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, he always answers
the other question.
They always answer yes, too.
Yeah. If you got they're going to put a sign up, and 600 feet down the road is a vacant sign. Well, I mean, we're proving a sign, and then 600 feet down is a vacant sign, and then down across the road is another vacant sign. Well, I mean, they're vacant signs.
It might be.
And the county's complaining. And I mean, the county council is complaining about too many signs that are vacant.
Yeah, but it might be to rent on new signs that are vacant. That's why they're vacant. So
someone won't rent.
Made in prices that some people get.
Well, yeah, not only the price, but you know, considering that we're in a very seasonable climate, then you know, if you notice, most of them are vacant in the winter.
Well,
there's less signs that are vacant in the summertime, especially at the beach, but also on the routes to the beach.
Right, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
And I know from you know, having bought or rented, you know, signs in the past, you know, I wasn't interested in renting billboards for air conditioning in the winter.
No.
You know, but when I wanted people to be aware that, you know, the business I was with, you know, was available in the summertime and the heat and, you know.
But you know, a lot of the signs are air conditioning, heating and air.
Right.
So I mean, you're catching it that way. I mean,
But the heating doesn't pay the bills. It's the air conditioning. And not just that, but I'm, you know, whether it's selling French fries or it's selling, you know, whatever it is, it's the nature of our beast.
Well, he does have a point. I came in tonight, I saw four.
Well, it's a winter time.
Well, I see them as I come in. And,
right.
Yeah. It's not, I'm looking for them. I just see them. Right. You know, they're,
Mr. Workman, would it alleviate some of your concerns if I added something in the letter about, you know, like we talked about with the other signs, as part of, you know, there's also an issue about we've noticed a fair amount of vacant signs.
So, yeah.
And
yes,
perhaps that should
I'd
be
like
looked
to
at.
See that.
Just add that to the letter.
Yeah, sure.
Let them address it.
I think Brett's point is that you got vacant signs. Why is there a need for another
more.
Sign?
Right, I get that too.
Brilliant.
But the need, and that's why I'm saying the need is not, it's not year-round.
Here, take right there from Wilson Baker's.
Need becomes greater in the summer.
That's when the price goes up.
Yeah,
well, everything does, right.
You know, so if you're renting all year long, probably cheaper for them to rent all year for them, probably, I would say. So in the summertime, that's when they'll sock it to you then.
Right. Yeah, around the food line, there's two empty ones. You got four in here and two's
empty.
That's
right. You see air conditioning, it's hot. If, you know that John's going to put a sign up, it's going to cost you some money.
It's not just air conditioning. It's any tourist service.
Yes.
And if that's going to be the case.
I think he's got a point.
Yeah, and if that's going to be the case in a certain area where there's so many billboards, again, restriction on how many billboards
look, if you look at that sign, look at that area, and you see four or five signs vacant there, and that guy want to put a sign there?
Too many signs.
Right. Something wrong.
Right.
Oh, they didn't tell you the truth that they had them rented.
Yeah.
When you ask them. They told you they did, but then they didn't. If they're empty, still.
I mean, I would say, like Lawrence. I mean, for what it's going to cost to put a sign up today, I don't think people would be shoving them up without having somebody lined up.
No.
Right.
I mean, the people come in today for these signs, I think they pretty well got something lined up.
And the ones that are typically vacant are the older, more dilapidated, you know, smaller signs.
Oh, I see some good signs.
There are a few out there that are on poles that are not being rented.
Not rented.
And it's the rent.
It's the rent.
The rent's too high.
It's on a Route 9. I don't know if it's ever had all four faces. It's got two faces on both sides, and I don't know that I've seen all four of them occupied.
On 9? Yeah.
Even in the summertime, Lawrence?
Yeah, probably even in the summertime.
It's too high.
They've always got one that says for rent. Space available, or whatever the wording is.
Mm. Do you remember you're allowed to do something like that?
We could put something in that letter and see what council says.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, they very well may want to.
Bud probably knows which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
And Mr. Workman, they very well may, if they put this on an agenda as discussion, they may invite you all to come participate and voice your concerns there as well. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Well, not every year, but on occasion, the council will invite the commission and the board together to a luncheon to discuss issues like they did sort of on the height issue. Mm-hmm. Some board members were there, commission members were there, Office of the State Fire Marshal was there, and some highway department was there, different issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not unusual that they do that.
I think it'd be a good thing, you know, give you an opportunity to explain that more articulately than what I'll put in the letter.
Councilman showed interest. My councilman showed interest. That's the reason I'm asking these questions, and that's the reason he is too, because they want to know what we think. They want to know what we think.
They want the input.
And you do have a new council member now that might appreciate the input, the insight of the commission and the board, or one or the other.
Sure.
I know, sir, but I think it's the board.
Yeah, I forgot about our new councilman there.
Well, that's true. That's good. All right.
We still get 50 cents a square foot, Lawrence, is it now still?
Yeah, it's still 50 cents a square foot, 25 cents on a renewal.
Renewal?
Per square foot.
Yeah, that's big money. Signs are big money. So I remember a time, John, just for just to get off the subject for a minute.
We don't get it.
Lawrence asked me to put a, put a.
For the county to use it anywhere they want to.
A system in for, you know, renewals, the signs. And I put a system in and I turned it over to Jenny. Jenny knows all about it. Well, anyway, I used, I put it on a computer and I sent the first bills out, right? I guess it was Dale Dukes that appointed you, right? And he got his bill. And I was sitting at lunch one day and he walks up to Lawrence and he says, "What's this?" Lawrence bails out and says, "Oh, I don't know, see Bud." And I'm sitting right beside him. And he says, "What is this?" I said, "It's your bill for your billboard, for your billboards." And he turned around and he said, "Since when?" I said, "Since you approved it in the." Anyway, he was a guy of good humor, though. You know, he'd laugh and he'd say, "Try and get it." Believe it. But it was interesting.
Okay. Last thing we had was general discussions on issues.